can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movies Podcast on the GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Heidi.
I'm your co-host, Sarah.
And I'm Stacy.
Hello and welcome. And today we will be talking about the movies Eighth Grade and The Edge of 17. First, we'll be starting with Eighth Grade, which it has now out in theaters, and it is directed by Bo Burnham of YouTube comedy fame. The movie follows eighth grader Kyla Day as she ends her middle school years and gets ready to start high school. Kyla makes motivational videos on YouTube on being confident and putting yourself out there, despite the fact that she struggles in school to make friends and generally to talk or make noise. She is raised by her single father who loves her, but Kyla is an unruly teenager and is often embarrassed by her father and kind of struggles to connect with him. Typical teenage things. Some events take place. There's an awkward pool party. She meets some high schoolers. There are crushes. Along with generally many, many awkward situations. I would like to start off by saying that I was overwhelmed by the authenticity of this movie. What I mean by that is I was continuously overwhelmed by how awkward I felt, and I was very glad that there was no one else in the theater because I squirmed the entire time.
You were alone in the theater?
I was alone in the theater, which really fit the theme of middle school, yeah. I would say. It basically played out my experience exactly as it was. And I just felt so uncomfortable. I just made noises the whole time, like, oh, no, no, no. And it was just, oh.
Yeah, I was uncomfortable just listening to you give that description.
Well, yes. I love the fact that you put awkward pool party as if, you know, at eighth grade there could be any other kind.
It's like, yeah,
is it
no,
awkward
that's true.
With everything? Awkward pool party, awkward doctor's visit, awkward, like, test taking. It's just awkward goes in front of everything at that age.
Oh, yeah. I felt that for sure.
Yeah, so how was eighth grade for both of you?
The real life.
It was okay. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to really relive all of the moments, but it was all right. I had an okay time. You know, I had friends, so that's basically all that mattered at that time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, of the middle school years, 6th, 7th, and 8th, 8th was probably the one where I was definitely most solidly into my awkward period. But then I was expecting, you know, oh, I heard about how terrible high school was and teenage years, so I was expecting that to be worse, and it somehow wasn't. So then I looked back and I was like, what the heck, and why was middle school the worst part of teenagehood? This is not fair. So yeah, eighth grade was are we done yet?
Wow.
Yeah. What about you?
Eighth grade was junior high for me. It was just seventh and eighth grade. Stacy knows this, that I went K through 12 all in one building. So seventh and eighth grade, we got to move from one side of the cafeteria to the other side of the cafeteria, you know, with the big kids.
Yeah, big steps.
In the high school. So I went to, I was still going to eighth grade with pretty much the same kids I went to kindergarten with.
Was that helpful to mitigate some of the awkward, or?
Maybe in some ways, and maybe in some ways it just made it worse because everybody already knew.
Yeah, knew everything.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no reinventing yourself. Oh, I'm going into junior high.
Right.
New school. Yeah. You were just stuck with everyone knowing all your stuff.
Mm. So yeah. All the teachers knowing everything, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And my dad is a teacher, so
that
made a difference. And then I have two older siblings, so they'd already been through all the grades. And, yeah, it's
of
just...
Of course.
Yep.
You get the classic, like, oh, you're so-and-so's sister.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's a special kind of awkward.
But I do kind of wonder if the teachers, like, during break would compare, so Sarah is much more awkward than her sister, right?
Much more. And I didn't have this issue because we moved to my hometown when I was two, but a lot of my classmates had parents who had been taught by the same teachers that we had. So you had that level of comparison.
Wow, yeah.
That is an intimacy I don't want to know.
Yeah, I'm the oldest, so I got to go through it first, and I didn't have any of the comparisons, thankfully.
Nice.
Yeah, wow. I was an only child, and my family didn't really live in the same area that I went to school in, so there's a lot of anonymity for me.
Lucky thank you. God.
Yeah.
But that was why I was very hesitant to watch 8th grade, because I had heard so much about the awkwardness and the cringiness, and I was just like, I lived it. I'm good. I don't need to re-experience this. I don't do well with other people's like cringy moments, let alone my own. So I'm like, I don't need to add to the cringiness of my life. My quota is completely met.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was so intrigued because when I saw the trailer, I was amazed at like, oh, she actually looks like an eighth grader as opposed to like, this is a 30-year-old trying to be a high schooler. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really what got me. And yeah, that delivered. It was real. It was real.
I wonder what actual eighth graders think of this movie, if it resonates with them, or if they feel, you know, because we're looking back at our eighth grade year, right. And so yeah. We have a special level of cringiness.
Well, this movie is actually R, so they can't see it.
Oh geez.
Well, no, the filmmakers did actually have to hold special showings.
They did.
For
they had
eighth graders
showing.
To come see it. I'm like, yep. Why yep. are you,
oh wow,
that goes yep. against your purpose, I think, to make a movie that the prime audience can't see. But
yeah,
okay.
What gives it the R rating then?
I think they're just like sexual suggestions,
mm-hmm.
and I think there might be some bad words in there. I don't really remember, but probably just mostly situational suggestions, I would assume.
Okay.
But I also thought it was interesting that like if you wanted to go see this movie as a middle schooler, which I'm not sure as a middle schooler I would want to go see it, because like I'm living it right now. I don't really know if I want to watch it. You have to go with your parents, which is just another level of awkward
right.
that I could not live through. I'd probably just die.
Right.
Please don't. No.
Yeah, there's no way. There's no way. Also, there were so many moments that were awkward, but also naive, which I think, like, I felt like the characters, because they're so young, they were so naive to situations that as a viewer who has already kind of been through it and has grown from it, I'm just like, oh, please don't do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they don't, you know, in the movie, they don't understand what's going on. And I was, it's just another moment to squirm at.
Yeah. So she does YouTube videos. So I'm older than both of you. How prevalent was social media when you were in eighth grade?
YouTube didn't exist when I was in eighth grade.
Okay.
Social media was definitely a thing, but like in the movie, they're always on their phones and they have smartphones, which when I was in school, we had cell phones that we could like text and call,
mm-hmm.
but I can't even imagine as a middle schooler having like Instagram in the palm of your hand at all times.
Yeah.
Like that would be like, there's a scene when there's like a drill and they're all just on their phones under their desks.
Wow.
Oh, geez.
And I'm like, that's crazy. I can't imagine growing up with that type of like pressure everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And how that's just like your go-to when you're bored. You just immediately pull out your phone, even though you're supposed to be in class, like learning things.
Right. I keep thinking of you know, the mean kids, and I just don't mm-hmm. need them to photograph or video my right. moments of yep. failure and put them out there.
Yep.
That was my fear, is like, okay, now everyone's on social media. So when you do have your wonderful awkward moments, it's preserved for all posterity forever. You never get to escape it.
Yeah,
I can't imagine. I think there is actually a scene in the movie where they kind of touch on that a little bit. Like there's like a self-aware moment where some high schoolers talk about that. And I like agreed with all their points. They're like, you've grown up with this your whole life. And I haven't thought about that at my age, no longer being in middle school and high school, like to grow up so cocooned in it, like your whole life has been with social media and with the internet and Instagram and everything around you. Like that would definitely shape how someone like grows up and is raised and sort of how they become a person. So I thought that was interesting that this movie really brought that to light in a way that I didn't think about. Like she makes YouTube videos and I'm like kind of impressed by her tenacity at that young age. And I also feel bad for her because her videos have like no views, which is so sad.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Does anybody watch them?
No. I mean, I did hear that Bo Burnham, to get to sort of like writing this movie, he actually watched a lot of YouTube videos made by middle schoolers, and he would go to the accounts that had no views.
Mm.
So he was like trying to get inside the head of some of these kids, and I think he did a pretty good job. And was definitely the inspiration for some of the main character's moments. And just the irony of her trying to talk about having confidence and then struggling to do that in school. I just felt her pain.
Yeah. So we're not going to give spoilers, but does it just follow her? Is there kind of an overarching plot besides just eighth grade?
I felt it was very a day in the life type of movie. Sort of like in that realm, it sort of seemed like an indie to me. Like there was moments of like a climactic moment, but it was sort of very like, this is just life. And it just kind of goes on and moves forward and some things like ebb and flow. And I thought that was interesting. There, the moments that were the most like touching were moments of like relation, like Kyla with her dad and like the relationship they have where he clearly loves her so much. But she just struggles with that and is kind of embarrassed by him, or like her relationships trying to make friends or not making friends, or like her like having a crush and looking at boys and in all of their awkward middle school gangly bodies.
I just look back at middle school boys and I'm like, yeah, I remember when I used to have crushes on them, and now I look and go, ah.
That was the weirdest experience for me, like watching this movie and there's this part where she like sees a guy she likes and like the music changes to like describe it, and I'm like, what? Oh, ew. I would not, maybe not have caught on to that unless you did the music, because wow, all right. Yeah. You look exactly like a middle schooler, just acne and all.
Aww.
They definitely, I think also Bo Burnham said that they filmed all like with actual eighth graders. So he said the hardest part was just making them all stop talking like while filming them, because they were all like, it's in that age group and acting that way. And because of like laws, they can only work for a certain amount of hours. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I'm sure just wrangling everyone to get together in a pool at one time.
Right. Now, I don't know, Bo, you said that he does YouTube videos also?
Yeah, so he became famous doing, like, comedy on YouTube and is a comedian. I think he does stand-up live. He's been in some movies here and there, never as, like, the protagonist, but he has done some other movies. I'm trying to think of, I can't remember what he's been in, but he's had some side parts here and there, and I think he wrote and directed this.
Nice.
So he really got into the head of an eighth grader. Which was amazing.
Impressive.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd want to do that.
Right? I completely like blocked off mine with mental bricks. You can't go back there.
You can't.
Yeah, I'm surprised you chose this age group. I mean, it's quite a time.
But think of the visceral reaction all three of us had. So it seems like, you know, if you want to get people's attention, then this would be the way to do it. Just the title, eighth grade.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in general, I think I enjoyed this movie. They had some great techno-electronic music moments that I think covered up some of the dialogue that could have been super awkward. So I am so grateful. But it definitely had a good sense to it, a good feel. I felt like I was going back. And to be honest, because of that, I don't think I could watch it again. But it was good. Just like, good, I don't want to go back to Live 8th Grade. I don't want to go back to watch it.
There you go.
And thank you so much. We'll be going to a commercial break. Please stay tuned.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Hello and welcome back to the GSMC Movies Podcast. We will be continuing and we will be talking about the movie The Edge of 17. Okay, The Edge of 17 is a movie about a young girl who is in her high school years. She has some struggles early on, some struggles with family relations and making friends, but she has her best friend to get her through it. Until some other events happen between her best friend and her brother, and her world kind of comes crashing down. It was, this was also a little difficult to watch. I think just the topic of adolescence is a little hard for her to feel like we're watching it again. But I would definitely say this had some moments of humor in it that I greatly appreciated.
Okay.
That really broke up some of the awkward. Stacey, what did you think about this one?
Well, I mean, I like it, although and we're in the last one. It was, you know, rated R for adult things. I think if this is rated R, I cannot remember now, it would be a bit more for language. There is definitely a couple of uses of the F word, but I do love how even just from the opening, you see her feet as she gets out of a car and she speed walks to her teacher and then is like, I don't mean to bring your day down or anything, but I'm gonna kill myself. Oh, I was just like, yes. What are we? And so you get very quickly of, aha, so sometimes this is a bit of a sort of dark sense of humor. But that's, you know, she's 17 and that's, yeah, I remember that. Definitely at that age, my sense of humor would have been a bit like, yeah, the world sucks and here we are.
Yep.
So I get it. I quite like this, actually. I think Hailee Steinfeld did a really good job.
I love her.
She's so great. Good. She's a little, when she filmed it, this came out, I believe, 2 years ago. And when she filmed it, she was a little over 17.
Yeah.
I think she was in her maybe early 20s, but she still totally looked 17. And, you know, since we first learned about her as a teenager, she's still sort of still a teenager in my head because I just haven't gotten past that. I also thought that Woody Harrelson as her teacher did a really good job. And he especially is where a lot of the dark humor sort of comes in.
Not surprising.
Because there's a number of times where, you know, she goes to talk to him while she's having this sort of, you know, adolescent crisis. And he says some things. I'm like, what kind of teacher are you? That's not what you say to a teenager.
I was shocked by some of the things he said. I thought he would make it up with, like, afterwards, like, some coming, like, I'm just kidding. Really didn't happen.
So what kinds of things did he say to her?
Well, like, in that opening scene where she comes in and announces she's going to kill herself because, you know, she's a teenager having whatever crisis and it's the end of the world, he responds by saying, I, too, am considering killing myself. And I have written a suicide note about how I only have 32 minutes of happiness a day during lunch, which has been interrupted these past few days by the same annoying person, meaning Hailee Steinfeld's character, Nadine. And I'm just like,
wow.
I mean, it works. And I think part of it is it works for Nadine. It works for who she is. Yeah. But him just saying that as a teacher, I'm like, that's not what you say. Dude, that's not what you say to a teenager. What are you doing?
I actually kind of had that teacher.
It wasn't your father.
It was not my father, thank goodness. No. But yeah, I could think of a teacher that would probably, I mean, I never announced I was going to kill myself, but right. I kind of had that snarky teacher.
Yeah, or yep. when she comes in one day and she announces very loudly, "Oh, I need to talk to you about homework." And then once the door is closed, it's like, "Oh, I don't need to talk to you about homework. I just came in to sit down," because she doesn't have anyone to eat lunch with.
Oh.
And she goes on to explain this problem to him. And he's like, well, maybe it's just that no one likes you. I'm just like, okay, yeah, that's like real talk to her, but I don't know that anybody would approve of the teacher saying that to their student.
Right.
Right.
That's a little too honest.
Yes, right. But he plays that character well. You can tell he does sort of care about her, but at the same time, it's just like, I'm teaching teenagers all day. What is my life? Sort of feeling behind him. So their relationship is very funny, even though when we first just jump straight into it, I'm just like, what is this? And why are you two talking to each other in that way?
Yeah, what is it about him as her teacher, do you think, that makes her feel like she needs to go tell him these things?
I think some of it for me was the as a viewer, observing, like, her desire for, like, a sort of like a male role model. And I think, like, he is that to her in a way. And so I just feel like she kind of just, like, wants that. I think, like, she wants someone that she can sort of, like, banter off of, I guess. I mean, it almost felt like a mystery to me a little bit of, like, why their relationship works, because they don't explain if they knew each other previously or if, like, he taught another class that she was in. They don't explain, but she takes it well. I mean, she reacts pretty better than I would react if a teacher told me that. And I think he's just the type of person that she kind of needs in that moment of her life, like someone to kind of challenge her in a way. That I guess is just kind of like the tough love that she needs.
Yeah, because like you said, she doesn't really have the real male role model. She was really close to her father, but then he died when she was 13. And we do see that in the film. And she feels very, you know, sort of ostracized from her family. She has an older brother, Darian, but they're not really close. Darian was always sort of the golden child and their mother's favorite. And she's sort of the younger, awkward one that her mother just can't quite understand. Her father was the one who understood her, but then he's gone. So she doesn't feel close to either of her family members. She has her friend Krista, who ends up dating her brother Darian, which is like the ultimate betrayal for her. And that's where the sort of crisis of this film starts, of like, the one thing I thought I could count on is literally in bed with, like, my greatest enemy. So then it's like, I have nobody else. And I think we do get, from the couple of times we see Woody Harrelson's teacher before she actually starts talking to him a lot, that she gets that he's sort of you know, a teacher who won't just sort of take things and be like, okay, whatever, but we'll mm-hmm. give it back to her, because she comes in before this whole crisis has started and mentions to him how he made a mistake in a lecture. I think it's about the Civil War, and he said the North seceded instead of the South seceded. And she points it out to him. And his response is, during any of that time, were you ever thinking, like, maybe I should get a life or something like that? And she, you know, she takes it very well. She's like, no, I was mostly just focused on how you were effing things up. And so they have that sort of, you know, rapport of, like, I can go back and forth with you. I don't have to be, you know, just sort of kid gloves, polite with you, mm-hmm. but you actually will listen to me, where I don't feel I have anyone else to do that with. So I really liked their relationship once I understood it, but at first it was just like, what are you doing? That is not how I ever talk to any of my teachers. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. I think also, like, he provides, like, some level of acceptance for her. Like, she feels that she is accepted by him, but he's also not just going to let her get away with things. Like, she can trust him, but he's going to kind of, like, dish it back, like, any sass that she gives. And I see that a lot with her character. She, like, wants to be accepted like a teenager does, whether that is from her friend or when her father was alive, from her father or from her teachers. But she also wants to look for it in, like, boys and in the crushes that she has and some of the other relationships that kind of develop. And just, like, that Woody Harrelson's character is that for her at times. But she also goes to look for it in other places. That it also sometimes made me feel like, no, please, please don't make this decision.
Yes.
Yeah. Please don't talk to this boy.
Well, and continuing with the, you know, I didn't really have that technology-wise growing up. Mm-hmm. She, at one point, sends a message to a boy on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And Facebook started, like, in the middle of my high school, and I most definitely didn't have a Facebook till I was in college. So it was, like, there was definitely not this whole, like, Facebook stalks this guy on Facebook because she really likes him, and then she actually goes to his workplace. And in real life, not stalks him, but it's just awkward with him. And I'm just like, I am so glad that I did not have the ability to, you know, do that when I was this age. If I wanted to stalk someone, I did actually have to do it in person. So that limited the amount of stalking I was doing, thank goodness, because they could see me.
I was just gonna say, how much stalking did you do, Stacey?
I didn't actually really stalk anybody, because the person I liked was in my class, so I didn't have to. But anyways, so yeah, I think part of what also works for her, for the Woody Harrelson character, is he feels approachable, because she mm-hmm. and you get this, you start with that, you know, I'm gonna kill myself thing, and then you go back in time with her explaining how we got here. You see her as a very young, awkward child with curly hair and with all the wild curly hair, and when she first meets her friend Krista. And that was, again, this film, sort of dark sense of humor. She's talking about how she didn't have any friends, she didn't have anyone to eat lunch with, and nobody paid her attention except for these three girls who you see come push her and then say, like, nobody likes you and you should get AIDS or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, wow, you're like seven at this time. So you're like third grade. Third graders are saying that? What the heck? So you do see this sort of period where she just doesn't feel, you know, her mother's very pretty and her brother's very perfect. And even her friend is, you know, she very easily gets in with the sort of more popular people when she starts hanging out with her brother. So she doesn't feel even attractive. You hear mm-hmm. her character a number of times in the film say, like, she has a line, something about where she thought about how she'd have to live with herself for the rest of her life.
Mm.
And that was depressing. So she doesn't feel, you know, like anyone would like her. Why should anyone like me? I don't like me. But then Woody Harrelson's character, from what you can tell from her point of view, is just a sort of, you know, balding 40-something guy who spends his day teaching teenagers. So his life's not great either. So I can talk to him. That's essentially what you get. And I really thought that worked well. Their relationship was fun.
Okay. Yeah, I liked their relationship. I also, there were times when I sort of wished there was a little bit more, because on the cover of the movie, it's the two of them. Mm. It's Woody Harrelson and Hailee Steinfeld. So I actually thought he was going to play a bigger role. But I would say just the way they interacted made his character so memorable, and I think really displayed a lot about her and just her feelings and desires for acceptance. And I just, gosh, I'm so glad they put humor in this, because there are some dark moments.
Sounds like it.
And we will be taking a short break, and then we'll come right back to continue talking about The Edge of 17.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has two blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Hello and welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. We will be continuing to talk about the movie The Edge of 17. So Stacey, I'm curious, what did you think of, so Nadine, the main character, she has a brother, Damien. What did you think of him and his character?
Was it Damien? I thought it was Darian.
Darian.
Whichever.
Damien.
So
something with a D.
I had a hard time with both Darian and Nadine's friend, Krista, who ends up getting in a relationship with Darian. I'm the older child, so I can totally see where Darian would, you know, just sort of be the jerky older sibling when your sibling is bothering you. Although he does say one thing about, you know, did you just say you have friends, plural?
Oh,
and I was
yeah.
like, dude, that is a jerky move.
No, that's an older brother move. I have an older brother who's 4 years older than I am, and he would defend me to the death, but nobody else can say that stuff to me,
right.
but he
yeah.
can say
yeah.
whatever.
And I get that, and especially I think he's only supposed to be a year older than her because she's 17 and mm-hmm. they're still at the same school. So I think he's supposed to be, you know, just 18 and a senior.
Yep.
So I'm like, okay, fine. Yeah, only a year older. I'm only, you know, a year and a half older than my sister and only a year ahead of her in school. I can get why at that time you could not see, you know, oh, she's just bothering me and I want her to go away and I want to get the last word. But now I'm older and, you know, a bit separated from that. I'm just like, wow.
It was so cruel. And he said that, but then he's dating her only friend. Like, he knows that that's her only friend.
Well, and her friend, too. Like, I can see that perspective from both points. Because at one point when she finds out her friends, like, they're actually dating, she mm-hmm. says, you have to choose me
yeah.
or Darian. And her friend's like, I'm not going to choose. And I'm like, I can get that from both points. Because the friend knows she doesn't have a great relationship with her brother because mm-hmm. that's her only friend since they were seven, so for 10 years now. But on the other hand, obviously you don't make your friend choose that way, even if it does always seem like you versus Darian. And she does feel very much like he's, you know, the perfect boy everyone loves and she's the complete outcast. So I can get why she's so upset about that. But I actually had a hard time because I was distracted by both Darian and Krista because I kept staring at them the whole film going, I've seen you in something else and I can't figure out what it is.
I don't know. I thought that too, but I wasn't sure. I couldn't think of where I'd seen them.
So Darian actually played Chaz in American Animals, which I had discussed a few episodes on this podcast. And Krista, it took me so long until there's a scene where she's out with Darian and they're at, it's a soccer dinner or something.
We see
a shot of soccer trophies, but then he goes to take a phone call and then they have to leave and she, you know, follows him and asks what's wrong. And that's where it hit me. She plays the daughter who was dating Adolf Eichmann's son in Operation Finale.
Oh.
And it was that same sort of, oh, we have to leave this very nice event because something. And I was like, oh, are you that? Oh. And then looked it up after and I was like, you are. Wow. But yeah, so I spent most of the film for both of them, just every time they were on screen going, I know you. What is this? And had a hard time even focusing on, you know, their actual character. Although I did totally get the Darian Nadine thing because I have a younger sibling who's right that close in age. And yeah, we were not, you know, like super loving and all that. I get it. I definitely do. But I actually really liked also the character of Erwin.
Because
Nadine, he sits next to Nadine in class and he clearly likes her moment one. And he's just horribly, horribly awkward about it.
Oh, my gosh. I loved him.
I was like, I don't really like the term adorkable, but you're kind of making me feel that way because you are adorably awkward and I cannot help it. Although it has been for almost all the characters, especially for Erwin and Nadine in this half the film, just when they were talking, going, stop talking. Stop talking.
Yeah,
he can almost everything he says is awkward, and he'll like knock things over and be like, "Oh, I didn't mean to do that. I don't know why." I was like, "Erwin, stop talking. I love you, but stop talking."
Yeah.
So there was definitely that for the awkwardness again.
He was so cute. Like he tried so hard, but yeah, like we're saying, just the stumbling over his words. He tried so hard. And I also, something that was, there's this weird scene when, like, Nadine is just lonely, so she hangs out with Erwin and is talking to him, and she's like, you just look like an old man.
Yeah.
Like a little old man in a convalescent home.
Oh, jeez.
And she just keeps going, like, in a wheelchair, like, can't walk. You know, just, it keeps going. But then I thought back, and I was like, when else has she talked about old people? And I realized when she meets Krista, her first impression of her was, like, she looked like a grandpa in a sweater.
Oh, jeez.
So I'm like, do you just like old people? Like, do you have some, like, affinity for, like, cute old people?
Well, maybe because by then we'd be past the awkward stage, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah. You just pass that when you're in your home.
I'm still
going
to be awkward in the nursing home. I know.
And you're
trying to make
sweater.
New friends. I'll be like, hi.
Bingo.
Never mind. Yeah.
Well, I felt for Nadine especially that a lot of that was just, and I definitely remember feeling this way at that age of just sort of not knowing how to stop talking.
Yeah.
And you say something wrong and then you keep talking to try and fix it, but you just keep, like, you know, putting your foot further in your mouth, and it's just like you can hear yourself, even your mind, going, stop talking, stop talking, and then you just keep going. That's what a lot of Nadine's what she says feels like, of, is just like you can tell she's trying to salvage that situation, but the more she says, the more it's just like worse and worse, and it's just like, stop talking, stop talking.
Yeah, like when the moment when she's talking to Erwin, who is Asian, and she's like, oh, I can, it's kind of like guesses what his family situation is, and then she's like, oh wait, I realized how, like, right, how, like, racist that sounded.
Like, I love that line. She's like I'm hoping none of that was racist, but now I'm thinking all of it was.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I really liked, whereas you wanted more with Woody Harrelson, and I too also from the trailer expected more of him, I wanted more with Erwin.
Oh, that's true.
And especially because you do have this sort of, it's not even a love triangle, it's a sort of, why are you picking the wrong thing? You can tell, I think the viewer can obviously tell Erwin likes her, and I think she can tell, and there's actually a point where he tried to kiss her.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, no, don't, but then they still hung out later. So she knows he likes her, but then she has her Facebook stalking crush thing on the guy who works in Petland, and so she's, like, sort of pursuing that, and I'm just like, you can't tell already, because that guy is made to seem, A, I kind of feel he's, like, stoned half the time, but B, he's obviously not made to seem like the, oh, sweet, we'll treat you right, nice guy, and there's a situation that happens that I don't want to spoil where you definitely see, you know, ah, yes, he is exactly the sort of jerk I kind of expected him to be, and I'm just like, but you have the nice, wonderfully dorkable Erwin who very clearly likes you, and nobody is surprised by that. Why not just go with him?
But isn't that always the case? I mean, you just overlook the sweet, nice guy who's trying too hard, and the guy who's all aloof and doesn't pay attention to you, and you make, because he's so aloof, you can then create these fantasies in your head where, you know, oh, I know he seems like a jerk, but if we were together, I know that would be different.
I can save him. I
know.
Yeah.
Stop doing that, girls.
Yeah. And I mean, that one especially, I think, would be a lot of where this film would earn an R rating. The whole situation, she's not exactly shy, and I know, you know, from being that age, that teenagers aren't necessarily shy about being sort of sexually explicit about what you want to do with someone. But we get that, there's actually a funny moment, I thought, pretty early on, where she's talking to Krista about her crush on this guy, and she's, you know, how do I go talk to him? Do I essentially just go up and say, I want you to essentially, you know, excuse my language, but this is in the film, put your dick in me.
Oh my God.
And as she's saying that, there's a guy walking by, and she's like, do I say that? No, not you.
She's like,
I love the sense of humor here, but also, what are you doing and why are you saying that? And then later says something even more explicit, and I'm like, okay, yeah, on the one hand, I can see why, you know, people who have 17-year-olds for certain of these moments would be like, yeah, no, you're not seeing that. But that's real. Like, that just felt very real, especially more and more nowadays with, you know, being able to access almost anything on the internet in the palm of your hand. It's like, yeah, that's just what teenagehood is. And you can't, you know, hide from that or pretend that it doesn't exist. So I liked how real this was. It did not, thankfully, it was not as cringy as I had almost expected it to be, which kind of goes along with my teenagehood, in that eighth grade was definitely more awkward than 17.
I
quite preferred 17.
Oh, yeah.
But it was still sort of awkward, please stop talking, please stop talking. And that felt very real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. There were definitely a lot of real moments and awkward moments. And oh, thank God for those moments of humor.
Yes.
Even if they were explicit.
I think we have a theme for this episode, and that would be awkward.
Yes.
Well, very teenagehood.
So. Yeah. Always will be. Well, thank you for listening, and we hope you will tune in next time.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.